Stay with us and we're going to show you how to take dead aim.
Take dead aim.
The importance of taking dead aim.
Welcome to Taking Dead Aim, a show dedicated to the game of golf and the people who play it in the Carolinas and around the world. Taking Dead Aim is a presentation of RBC Wealth Management and Academy Sports and Outdoors. And now, here's your host, the guy using your member number at the snack bar, Charlie Nance.
Welcome back once again. We're Taking Dead Aim, presented by the Charlotte office of RBC Wealth Management, located in the beautiful tree line of South Park and Academy Sports and Outdoors. I'm Charlie Nance on Twitter, at CLT underscore golf guy, and a little bit of this and that on the show today. One of my favorite craftsmen in the area is Ken Hissom. You may know him as one of the nice guys behind the counter at the Ballantine Resort. However, he also operates kickstandputters.com and does some of the finest refinishing and refurbishing work this side of the Scotty Cameron studio. We had the chance to catch up not long ago. Also, our 10 predictive question series continues with fansided.com's golf guy, Ron Mintz. But we begin today with the continuation of the golf legacy of Bobby Jones, with the reopening of a very unique public golf course in Atlanta, the Bobby Jones Golf Course, and I spoke this week to General Manager Brian Conley. Brian, for starters, full disclosure, I lived in Augusta, Georgia for 5.5 years, so I've been around some heavy footprint of Bobby Jones in terms of golf course architecture. In fact, I believe the reason why I had to start playing a draw was because of Bobby Jones and his input on architecture in Augusta. But his imprint is on the entire state of Georgia and, to be honest, the entire game of golf. In Atlanta alone, you have the Eastlake Revitalization, the Atlanta Athletic Club, his footprints are there as well. But this fascinates me. The Bobby Jones Golf Course, originally built in 1932. Now, tell me, let's start at the beginning. How did this course first come about and what was it?
Well, basically nothing had happened to the golf course since 1932. So it had become quite obsolete in all accounts, not just in turf care, but condition, playability, length. It became dangerous.
Was it privately owned or was it a municipal course?
It has been and was always a municipal course owned by the City of Atlanta. The City of Atlanta had three other courses within its folio of public municipal golf courses. So this is one of those, but obviously near and dear to the heart of the local residents, you know, having Don Bobby Jones as its namesake, it kind of was a little bit more of a prideful location, but everyone around it and involved with it were just kind of tired of seeing it continue to go downhill and apparent that nothing was going to be done to change that course.
Was Jones involved in the initial design in 1932?
No, not at all.
Okay.
The city built the golf course. It was just named after Bobby Jones. From my understanding, I think he hit an inaugural shot off the first tee box, but I don't know that he ever played the course after that.
Wow. Okay. So it had become run down. It had become, for lack of a better term, an eyesore. And when golf courses, municipal courses, city courses get like this, a lot of times you start to have the evil of golf. Real estate developers start sniffing around and seeing what could we do with this golf course. I'm sure some of that was going on. But the local residents, the golf community of Atlanta, they get together. And does a group buy it back from the city or do they work in conjunction with the city?
Yes, so a foundation was started, or a group before the foundation actually was started, with ties back to the Jones family. Family attorney just kind of took it upon himself and post-retirement to see something happen to renovate and rejuvenate the property. So obviously, working with the City of Atlanta first, because they were the owners, that just never really got off the ground. He had a golf course architect to do it basically pro bono. That was Bob Cupp. They met, came up with this 9-hole design, and understanding that with the footprint that there was just no way, no amount of money to ever get in a full 18-hole golf course out of it. But the flip side of that is it would allow them to put a driving range on it, which this area does not have from a public perspective. There's not another public driving range now in the City of Atlanta inside the perimeter besides this one.
Wow.
So, that process got about as far down the road as it could before, once again, it just was not getting any cooperation from the City of Atlanta. So something happened where the state of Georgia and the city of Atlanta both kind of needed a favor, and part of that favor was the transfer of land of this property from the city to the state. And that literally opened up the dam and pretty much led to an extremely quick amount of time where we stand today, where this is now state property owned by the state of Georgia that is leased to a foundation under the name Bobby Jones Golf Course. It is a for-charity 501c3, and then it is contracted out to Mosaic Clubs for management. And here we are today as a public daily fee golf operation.
Brian Conley is the general manager of the Bobby Jones Golf Course. He's our guest taking Dead Aim. This is in Atlanta. But it's fascinating to me. Bob Kupp, a lot of people may not be familiar with him as a designer, but he's one of those guys that wasn't just a golf course architect. He's been described as an artist. And the layout and the work that he did with your course is fascinating in that I've heard of reversible golf courses before, but I've never played them. In layman's terms, to someone who's not actually done this before, explain to me how this works.
So the inspiration, and Bob Kupp, to his credit, hopped on board this project, as I said, pro bono. He wanted to see this happen, and he put his full effort and brilliance into this, as you said, as an artist. The inspiration came from St. Andrews, which obviously through Bobby Jones, there's other parallels there, so it just kind of made sense that he put it on paper, and eventually over a considerable amount of time, it actually worked on paper, that with 9 double greens in 18 distinct teeing areas, you could make use of a 9-hole footprint in a reversible nature. The only catch is that you can only put 9 holes equivalent of people out at one time, and everyone on the golf course must be moving in the same direction. So it's kind of a figure eight in a reversible sense, in that you do play 18 consecutive unique holes, never hitting the same shot twice, never hitting into the same green from the same direction twice, and never hitting from the same tee box twice. The way you do it is all participants will play all 9 holes of what is our Azalea course in the same direction, and then the turn occurs where everyone will play their first hole of the Magnolia course and then continue to play those 9 unique holes in the opposite direction. So it works pretty cool. It's neat that at the turn, the group that you are following now becomes the group following you as everyone turns and goes the opposite direction. The green to tee box distance here is a matter of steps, and that even occurs at the turn. So it is a continuous round of golf from any hole that you start on. And that's the only experience or only way to experience the reversible nature is in a shotgun format. Otherwise, through most days, we'll operate as a tee time 9-hole facility where you can obviously play the same direction multiple times, either 9, 18, or 27 holes. But you will have 10 to 12,000 square foot greens with 2 pin locations to play to a different pin location if you choose to give yourself a little bit of variety, not to mention 8 distinct different tees, because we have adopted, and Bob adopted this from the get-go, the long leaf tee system.
Now explain the long leaf tee system.
So we've all heard recently kind of the buzz, or catchphrase, buzzword of tee it forward. For everyone's sake, and
yes,
that does not completely address the biases and the barriers that come along with that, which are gender-based tees or age-based tees that are, you know, denoted by color, and we all associate certain colors to certain
right
genders or ages. So this basically is a number system. There are 8 numbered tee levels, 1 through 8, that coordinate with a person's ability to drive the golf ball or distance that they hit the golf ball. There's a chart that the Longleaf group, which is the same as the U.S. Kids, Dan Van Horn, that years and years and years of data have compiled, that takes the average length of a person's tee shot and assesses them to a level of tee that they play, so that the experience, if you're on the proper level tee box, should be the same for all golfers. So if a par 4 plays relatively driver 7 iron, it should play driver 7 iron for everyone from their respective level tees. So our level 1 tees play at about 3,500 yards as a full 18-hole golf course, and it stretches all the way up to the level 8 tees, which are just a shade under 7,400 yards.
Brian Conley is the general manager of the Bobby Jones Golf Course in Atlanta. He's our guest taking Dead Aim. You mentioned, I always love to hear, and because a lot of places I play aren't this way, I like short distances from greens to tee boxes, because what it gets me is this. When Bobby Jones was alive, there was no such thing really as any kind of junior golf programs in this country. But I'd like to think, as big as he was on the amateur game, that he would be so all about the first tee program and so all about amateur and junior golf programs in this country that I'm willing to bet everything I have right now that you guys have a serious commitment at your golf course to that.
Yeah, the junior aspect, the amateur aspect, I mean, he was the ultimate golfer, the ultimate amateur golfer. So we are partnered up. We will be a official U.S. Kids Golf Academy. Our academy director will be certified as a U.S. Kids Academy director. All of our instructors dealing with the U.S. Kids program will be certified U.S. Kids instructors. It will be a benchmark of this program that they are looking to roll out nationwide, so we will be very, very involved with the U.S. kids moving forward for our age group 12 and under. And then once that junior graduates out of that U.S. kids program, right behind them, we're working with our State Golf Association and section, the Georgia section PGA, with that junior programming, who will be housed here at our clubhouse in about 14 months at the Murray Golf House. So junior golf, we will basically have something not just for the collegiate-minded athlete, but also just your average golfer who loves the game and just wants to compete and continue to compete as an amateur golfer all the way through their teenage years and into college.
All right, Brian, here's the big question, the one that everyone wants to know. It's no secret. This dang game is expensive to play. What is the price point? What is the cost of playing the Bobby Jones Golf Course?
Sure. So we are daily fee, public access, so we do not have memberships or any kind of prepaid programs or annual plans like that you might see across the market in some semi-private environments. Our average daily rate will vary. We will have a dynamic pricing model. So that model will take into account the demand on an inventory basis, similar to what you see in major sporting events, airlines, and hotels today. We're anticipating once we get rolling into season that the average green fee for 18 holes during the week is probably going to be anywhere in your mid-40s to $50 range, and then that'll go up probably into the weekends where it might get into the $80 range. Tournaments and outside events we'll be able to cater to on a limited basis. Those might be a little bit more of a premium price for some extra perks that we can accommodate as a staff for team-building activities and such, but the daily average golfer average green fee needs to be something that we can, you know, give a high-end premium product for, maintain the golf course in a way so that it doesn't get back into the condition it was before, but understand that it still has to be a reasonable rate for basically a four-hour experience.
Walking allowed any time or just at certain times of the day?
Walking is allowed all the time. Our rates don't necessarily depend on whether the player decides to ride or walk. The rate is based on the tee time. So it's up to the player to walk or ride. It's an extremely walkable layout. As I mentioned earlier, the distance from green to tee is minimal. It's a matter of yards, not lots like we see in many subdivisions nowadays that have golf courses. So it's extremely walkable. We do encourage walking. But it is up to the player's choice. It's not necessarily any kind of a price bias for that.
Well, everything that I've read, everything that I've heard, and everything that has been written about your golf course just says it's a magnificent experience and one that everyone needs to take advantage of. Atlanta's not that far away from Charlotte. The Bobby Jones Golf Course. Brian, where exactly are you located?
So we're right kind of in the corner of the Y that the connector and then 85 North and 75 North makes. We're directly off of 75, the first exit off 75 North, coming northbound on the connector in downtown Atlanta, Northside Drive, and when you come off that exit, we're less than a mile on your right.
This whole double green concept and playing the course different ways, it fascinates me. Definitely worth a trip to Atlanta. From the Bobby Jones Golf Course, that's General Manager Brian Conley. And when we return, Fansided.com's golf guy, Ron Mintz, takes dead aim at the upcoming golf season with our 10 predictive questions presented by the Charlotte office of RBC Wealth Management, located in the beautiful tree line of South Park and Academy Sports and Outdoors.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music.
Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
We are Taking Dead Aim, presented by the Charlotte office of RBC Wealth Management, located in the beautiful tree line of South Park and Academy Sports and Outdoors. And our annual 10 predicted questions for the upcoming golf season series continues now with the golf guy at fansided.com, Ron Mintz.
Ron, last year this was question number one, over under major appearances by Tiger Woods. I set the number at 1.5, and it's still amazing as I look back how many people took the under. This year I'm going to change it somewhat, over under regular tournament wins by Tiger Woods. And again, I'm going to set the number at 1.5.
I say over on the regular tournament wins. A year ago, you know, I didn't give him a chance to win anything, but he proved me wrong, and winning the tour championship showed me he can still win the big events. It's not a major, but it's a big deal, obviously. So I really think regular tour events over, although I don't think he'll win a major this year.
I like the way Ron Green Jr. put it when I had him on, I think, a week ago. He said that he didn't think we've seen yet the best of comeback Tiger. Now, not to say it's going to last a whole hell of a long time, but he doesn't think we've seen the best of it yet. And maybe we just got a taste of it towards the end of the year with the great finish of the Open Championship and the PGA and then the Tour Championship.
I agree totally. I mean, he's going to be 43 on December 30th, so he's going to start the year at 43. The only thing I was worried about with Tiger, his back never seemed to give him a problem, but he did not look like he was in good shape from a cardio standpoint. He would get exhausted. And Joey LaCava, his caddy, said that in all his preparation, he had been riding in a cart, and he wasn't walking the courses. And it took him a while to get his golf legs back. Great shape as far as working out in the gym, but he wasn't doing enough cardio. So hopefully in the offseason he's worked on that and he won't get fatigued. And I think that was why he probably didn't win more last year.
Fansided.com's golf guy Ron Mintz, our guest, Taking Dead Aim. Let's move on to question number two. This is one of my favorite questions. This is sort of a great Vegas prop bet. More likely to happen, Rory and or Spieth complete the career Grand Slam this year or neither ever completes it?
I really, despite the fact that neither one of them are really playing that great, especially Jordan right now, he's going through, I think, just mental issues with his putter. Anything inside 3 feet, he struggles. And you can just see in his body language, he's not committed to the putts. He's very insecure. But I think there's a chance that Rory could win the Masters this year. I mean, if you look at his record there, he's had 5 consecutive top 10 finishes. He tied for 5th last year. And it's just a course that he should have won on already. We know what's happened there in the past. He's a year away or into his marriage now, and I think that was a distraction this past year. He even admitted that he planned his schedule around places that his wife wanted to go to because she'd never went because she was going to be traveling with him the whole year. So he was really on his honeymoon while he was playing golf. I think this year he'll be more committed, especially dropping down to 6th in the world golf rankings. And so if he's ever going to win the Masters, I think this is a year. I'll go ahead and say I think this year Rory will do it, but not Spieth.
You know, we were talking about Spieth and Tiger earlier. I think the stat that came out a few weeks ago that's really telling is last year at this time, Tiger was ranked, I don't know, 690-something in the world, and now he's ranked 13th, one spot ahead of Jordan Spieth.
Yeah, he didn't even play last week and moved up a spot.
Just crazy.
Yeah.
Ron, last year I asked if Justin Thomas and Brooks Koepka were more likely to build off their major championship success or have that chasing appearance fees hangover that we see all the time. Both had really good years. Brooks had a great year. Will both, either, or neither win a major this year?
I'm really, really high on Brooks Koepka.
So you think he continues this? 3 out of 6 of his last starts, and you think he can continue?
I do. I actually think he's the best player in golf right now, even though he's not number one, he's number two right now. I'll tell you why. He started out on the European Tour. He didn't come out like Jordan and Justin, get his PGA Tour card and get all those exemptions. He started out the hard way. He's used to the travel. He actually loves playing in Europe. He loves playing in Asia. So any off season or appearance fees, tournaments, he would have probably played in anyway. He's very confident. His game is solid. Justin, I'm just not sure where his head is, but I would not be surprised. And I expect Brooks to win a major this year. Which one, I don't know. But I think he'll be a factor in all four of them.
Fansided.com's golf guy, Ron Mintz, our guest taking Dead Aim, our 10 predictive questions for the upcoming golf season series. Number four, Augusta, Bethpage Black, Pebble Beach, Royal Portrush. Do you think these major championship venues are more likely to see players padding their major championship resumes or first-time winners?
I definitely think it'll be padding their resumes. These are courses that are so hard for a newcomer or first-timer to win on, although Lucas Glover did win the U.S. Open at Bethpage back in 2009. Of course, Tiger won there in 2002, so you have to wonder how he'll do there this year. And I think Phil finished second. Of course, that's the elusive career Grand Slam for Phil is the U.S. Open, but he'll be 49 this year. So I do think it'll be padding their resumes. And there's a name I'm going to throw out there for you. I think will win another major this year, and that's Francesco Molinari.
Really?
Not bragging, but I had been researching him quite a bit, following him this past year. I predicted 2 weeks before the Open that he would win, even though Vegas had him at 50-1. But he'd been playing so well over in Europe and sort of flew under the radar. But he has a new coach. He has a new mental coach. He's changed his whole attitude about golf to where it's one stroke at a time. And he said his problem in the past was he would get a lead and start thinking about, you know, the 18th hole and winning, and it would slip away from him. And now he just looks at one shot at a time. He doesn't look back. He doesn't look forward.
I have thought several times this year what I wouldn't have given to have a crystal ball at this time last year and walked into, a Ladbrokes in Europe or in Vegas and see, hey, what kind of odds you give me on Francesco Molinari winning a major championship and finishing in the top 10 and just seeing what kind of money I could have made last year?
Well, I have a follower who actually is a bookmaker in Vegas. I'm not sure which casino, but he texts me from time to time, and he actually bet on Molinari, so because he saw my post and said he laid down a considerable bet, so he was very happy. I'm not a gambler, but I think these guys that do gamble, they don't really go with the favored people. They go with someone paying 50-1, so when the payout's bigger. But you're not the only one, but I think he's always been a solid player, but he didn't live up to his potential, and he's finally reaching it. So I think he'll win another one this year.
Ron, speaking of potential, Cameron Champ just won his first tour event. This guy kills it. However, while he was averaging 324 off the tee, he was nearly last in the field in fairways hit in his victory, but third in greens hit. Is this what's wrong with the game, or is this just where the game is and there's nothing we can do about it?
This is where the game is, and it's going to stay this way. They're not going to roll the ball back. They're not going to change the equipment. I mean, that horse has left the barn and way down the road. Brooks Koepka explained it perfectly. He said, fairways are overrated. And when I saw the headline of that in an interview he did, I thought, what's he talking about? And he explained it this way. He said, I would rather hit a driver 360, 380, and be in the woods 60, 70 yards from the green and hit it out with a wedge, then be in the fairway and have to hit a 5-iron into a green. And that's the way they play. Now, they know where the big misses are, where there's brush and stuff that they can't hit out of, but they also know where their woods are that they can get out of. And so that's the way they're playing. They don't get upset about hitting it in the woods. They just want to get close to the hole and use the wedge. So it's driver wedge, and that's what it's going to be, I'm afraid.
Fansided.com's golf guy, Ron Mintz, our guest taking dead aim. Question number six in our 10 predictive question series. Bryson DeChambeau and Ricky Fowler and John Rahm. Those are the only three players currently in the World Golf Rankings top 10 who have not won a major. Which one wins first? Will it be this year? And if I threw in number 11, Tommy Fleetwood, into the mix, does that change your mind?
It definitely changes my mind. I think out of all those four, Tommy Fleetwood is my favorite to win a major this year. He's ranked 10th in the world. Again, he's one of those players, you know, pops up from time to time, but he is solid. He's got a lot of international wins. Ricky Fowler will win a major. I have probably predicted him to win a major 10 different times, and I've quit doing it. But he's had 9 top 10s in 34 major tournaments. He's tied for second in the U.S. Open and the British, tied for second at the Masters. I mean, he's come so close. And people say he can't close. He can close. If you'll remember the Players' Championship a couple of years ago, he went 3 rounds or 6 holes with, or 5 holes with Kevin Kisner in sudden death. They had to play the water hole 3 times, and he and Kevin both were within 5-6 feet on every tee shot on the water hole, and Fowler made his birdie putt, and Kisner just missed his.
Look, his first win here in Charlotte, he stared down Rory McIlroy to win.
Yeah. I don't know if he's, you know, sometimes, like you said, success gives these guys a false sense of security, but the money doesn't last forever. In Rory's case, I think that's been his problem. He signed a $200 million contract with TaylorMade and Nike, and so he's set for life. Yeah. He's admitted golf's not his number one priority anymore, although he wants to be number one in the world. But, yes, Fowler's going to win a major. I don't think it's this year. But Tommy Fleetwood is definitely going to win a major, and I think this could be the year. And Royal Portrush, I mean, there's not a lot of history there. I look back, and the only major I've seen, or only open I've seen, was back in the 50s. Now, they played the senior open there several times. Unless I missed something, there's not a lot of people familiar with the course.
No, it's sort of a wild card in that group. And I tell you who I am through underestimating and overlooking with his win in Vegas. Bryson DeChambeau is not just a weirdo. Bryson DeChambeau is a great, great professional golfer. And it's not going to surprise me if he wins a major this year. Nothing this guy does surprises me, because every time somebody talks bad about him or says something that they don't think he's legit, all he does is win. I think in the last 7 months, he's won as many times as Fowler has in his whole career.
He has. And he surprised me almost as much as Tiger did this past year. I thought his engineering or whatever he does out there with his approach. Brandel Chamblee said he's a disciple of The Golf Machine, which Brandel says is the worst book that's ever been written about golf, and he hates it. But it works for Bryson. And I was jokingly posting the other day, think how many tournaments he could have won if they'd let him use that compass this year. So, he wouldn't surprise me if he won. I still think, like Augusta, Ben Crenshaw says, on average, it takes 5 appearances at Augusta for you to have a realistic chance to win. Maybe not so much in the PGA and U.S. Open, but definitely at Augusta. But do I think he'll win a major? Oh, definitely. I think all 3 of them will, or all 4 of them will. John Rahm, I think he needs to get his temper more in control. That's his biggest handicap right now. And, of course, Fowler, he just needs to pull the trigger and make it happen. So,
Ron Mintz, the golf guy with Fansided.com, our guest taking dead aim, 10 predictive questions for the upcoming golf season. This is one of my favorite annual questions. Yes or no, do you think the USGA finds a way to screw up the setup at Pebble Beach and make themselves the story once again at the U.S. Open?
Absolutely. There's no doubt about it. As long as Mike Davis is with the USGA, they're going to be the story. And you know, we could talk all day about him. I don't understand their philosophy, but they no matter how much criticism they get, they still stick to what their method, and I don't know what it is. It's a madness, really.
I think it was Kyle Porter with CBSSports.com that said when I asked this question, you know, it's not a question of if they're going to screw it up. The question is, what are they going to screw up?
Exactly. I mean, look at Chambers Bay. I mean, how many – I think it's the only major in history that – you played a hole one day and it was a par four, and the next day they moved the tees and make it a par five.
Yeah, just ludicrous.
That is not, you know, I believe majors are sacred in golf. I hate to even think about when Tim Fincham wanted to make the tour championship, I mean, the Players' Championship, a fifth major. I don't think there should ever be more than four majors on the PGA Tour or in men's golf. But yet, look what they did at Chambers Bay. That's never happened before, and I just hope it never happens again.
Ron, Billy Payne's going into the World Golf Hall of Fame, or the World Golf Hall of Fame, rather, primarily for his work in growing the game in the last 10 years as chairman at Augusta National. However, unlike chairman before him, he made no significant changes to the golf course. With Chairman Ridley coming in, a former U.S. amateur champion and a great player, how much change and how fast do you think it's going to occur? And do you think there's a possibility of rolling back some of the Hootie changes that everyone just universally hates?
I don't know if they're looking at that many changes. Now, we're going to see a change, and you live in Augusta. You know this hole better than I do, but they're changing the fifth hole. They're moving the
Yeah, that's
box.
Done. That's already been done. That is a change that's going to play much longer this year.
Yeah, they started digging dirt the day after the Masters was over with last year, and they're done with it. When that course was originally designed, it was sort of patterned after the road hole, the famous road hole. But it started causing backups, especially on Thursday and Friday, with players standing on the tee waiting for groups in front of them. So that's their explanation why they moved it across the road to spread the field out. But I think that's a great change. There were rumors about them buying property on number 13 to make it longer because, you know, it used to be very few people could get there in two, and now everybody does.
Well, yeah, now it's driver 7-iron. Everyone, I think, feels the same way about 13. It's not that we want it to be changed because it's such an iconic hole. It has such history. I think we all could play that hole in our mind if we haven't had the opportunity to play it in person. But I think we all realize that they're going to change it. It's a question of is this going to be the guy who does it, or is it going to be the guy after him? But eventually, somebody is going to mess with 13.
Well, there's two schools of thought. One is that, and the other one is, you know, they have bought – well, I don't know if they finished the deal with Augusta.
Oh, no, it's bought. It's done.
Is it bought? Okay. Well, they refused one offer on you. But they're buying property all around there. They're trying – you know, there's only one house left on one road. And, again, you live in there. You know what street I'm talking
yes,
about.
Yes, I do.
That hasn't sold, and it's a three-bedroom ranch house. It's a nice little house, but they've offered the guy $1 million, and he won't take it. So what have they done? They planted these huge pine trees all around his property so you cannot see it from the course. They're trying to buy every piece of land within a mile of the club just for privacy reasons. And so they would have bought that property anyway. So that doesn't necessarily mean they're going to do anything anytime soon. Down the road, yeah, I think it's inevitable. They're going to have to make 13 back like it was, you know, make it more of a challenge, because that was the key of Amen Corner. Would you hit in the creek there? And how many of the old Masters do we watch where we see Curtis Strange hitting in the creek? And other people have lost the tournament there, but it's not a factor anymore. So I miss that part of the Masters. As far as Ridley goes, he has only said that he intends – like other chairmen before him, to maintain the integrity of the golf course. And you can read a lot into that. I think what that means is they're not going to let players overtake Augusta. They're going to always make Augusta a challenge, and they'll do whatever they have to do to keep it that way.
Ron, is there a player that you have your eye on, like a Cameron Champ, a Sam Burns, Austin Cook, that you think will take the next step this year?
Just in those three, I'm really high on Austin Cook, and I probably a lot of that's because I've talked to his caddy, Kip Henley, who I think
Kip loves him.
Oh, he does. And Kip is he's as honest as the day is long, almost to a fault. Even when he caddied for Vijay, which was one of the best bags on tour because he plays and wins a lot of money whether he wins or not, he was about to work Kip to death because he was practicing more than he was playing. And Kip walked away and was very vocal about it. So when he says Austin's a real deal, I believe him. And I look for him to have a breakout year of those three. Now, Sam Burns, Cameron Chapp, how can you not ignore these guys? But I had a friend that's a European writer. He's been around for 50 years. And he says, there's so much parody on tour right now. It's the flavor of the week. All these guys are winning, and then they'll win, and you may not hear from them for a couple of years. So, but I think Austin is definitely here to stay, and he will be a factor.
Get you out of here on this. Ron Mintz is fansided.com's golf guy. Your surprise or gut prediction about anything in the world of golf in 2019?
Wow, I thought about this a lot. I don't like to deal in rumors, but I've been hearing rumors for 2 years now on two particular tournaments that will lose their spot on the PGA Tour schedule. Another one is under fire from their members, the club, because they don't want to host a PGA Tour event. I don't know if most fans out there know what that does when your club hosts a PGA Tour event. It basically means you can't play it for 6 months. And especially the high-end country clubs, these guys are paying a lot of money to be members, and they want to play. So I'm not going to mention them because they're rumors, although, like you said, where there's smoke, there's fire. But I wouldn't be surprised to see at least two events change venues announced this year, but changing for 2020. But with that said, I think Tiger's going to be the big story this year. I do think he's going to win many times. It would not surprise me to see him win a major. I don't predict it, but I think he's going to be the big story, the main story, and that's good for the game of golf.
From fansided.com, that's their golf guy, Ron Mintz. Up next, one of the finest craftsmen in the area, Ken Hissom of kickstandputters.com, takes dead aim at refinishing and refurbishing your putters and irons. Presented by the Charlotte office of RBC Wealth Management, located in the beautiful tree line of South Park and Academy Sports and Outdoors. Hey, we're taking dead aim, presented by the Charlotte office of RBC Wealth Management, located in the beautiful tree line of South Park and Academy Sports and Outdoors. Ken Hissom is an artist and a craftsman. His work in refinishing and refurbishing is on display at kickstandputters.com, and we had the chance to catch up not long ago. Ken, it's been a couple of years since we've talked about you and your business, and in that time, it's really grown. We'll get to that in a second. But one thing that I've never asked you before, to do what you do, to refinish and these putters, and I know you do other clubs as well, but putters is really your primary thing. It's a love affair, a person and their putter. It has to be your favorite club in the bag, I would think. Where did your love affair with putters begin?
Oh, it had to be with my mom and dad, who I was the youngest of six. So I would tag along with them. And I was there's a kind of an 8-year, 9-year difference between me and the fifth kid. So what they did was they were golf banshees, and they would take me to the golf course, and they would hire a caddy to babysit me, and I would just sit on the putting green. We just putted together. I remember that, my earliest thing. So that's where I fell in love with the putters. That's where I fell in love with the putter. I can tell you exactly which one I had. I had a Tommy Armour IMGL, and I putted with that as a little kid from the age of 5 or 6 on up to my early teens.
Most of us go through several putters in their golfing life, but there's that one that always stays in the garage, stays in the office, stays around because it goes in and out of the bag. My son asked me one time about it, and I said the best way to equate it is this. Putters are a lot like women. you can date a lot of women and you can have a lot of fun with a lot of women, but there's only one soulmate that you're going to have.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's like, I can remember my, it's funny. My first kiss with a girl, and I can remember her name, and it's that first taste of, you know, dropping a 20-footer, you know, and the one that would come through for you on the putting green early on, and that's the one you save. Then, you know, the new models come out, so you're like, oh, maybe that one will work, and it really doesn't meet that first experience that you had with the putter. So to kind of use that metaphor, I still have that Tommy Armour IMGL in my closet.
That's what I was going to ask you, if you still held on to that putter.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. My dad gave it to me. He's passed away since. And I pull it out every once in a while and can remember playing in 1984 with him and a member using that putter. So there's a lot of memories that kind of, you know, those golfers out there, that there's memories attached to this. So that's my saying. It's not only do I restore putters, I also restore some memories.
Did you restore that Tommy Armour, or have you left it as it was?
I left it as it was because now he gave me another one, a Tommy Armour IMG 5 that I have restored. But that first one, I kept it. Just so that, you know, there was a couple dings and nicks in it that he put in by accident. So I just, that's what I that one I kind of kept the way it was when I first saw it.
Ken Hissom is the man behind kickstandputters.com. Check out his website. See the work he does. It's an artist's work. He's our guest taking Dead Aim. A lot of people, before I met you, a lot of people, our only thing options were to send some things off to Golf Works up in Ohio, or to send them back to the Scotty Cameron studio in California. Not to say they don't do a great job, they do, but their backlog has gotten so great now that you could be without a putter for 2 or 3 months at a time waiting for it to come back. What is the average when someone says, hey, can you do this for me? What's the average time it takes you to redo a putter?
About 3.5 weeks, 3.5 to 4. Now, if I have to do a PVD coating, we're looking at four weeks. And those who are not familiar with PVD, that's it's kind of like Ricky Fowler's black irons, right? And so that's going to take about, at the most, 4 weeks.
One thing that I have noticed that has come a long way in recent years, and I really wanted to talk with you about this. I can remember when stainless steel putters came out, and I can remember people saying, man, I'd really like this. I'd really like to get it refinished with this. The word on the street was there wasn't a finish that would adhere to the stainless steel, so you really couldn't do anything with it, and that's not the case anymore.
No, we have, you know, we have PVD. We also have DLC, which is a derivative of kind of a offshoot of PVD. We also have Cerakote, not as strong as the other ones mentioned, but with Cerakote, they use ceramic coating that they use a lot on guns. And so, you know, if you just take care of it and use a head cover, that will last a long time.
Ken, is there a putter that's come in to your workshop that the owner, when he dropped it off, basically said, I don't know what you can do with this, just do the best you can? And then when they came and picked it up, there were almost tears in their eyes. Have you had that experience?
I've had, and this is the best part of it. You know, it was a. I can tell you the putter. It was a Ben Hogan Little Ben putter.
Oh wow!
It was a guy. It was the. It's almost like the old Calamity Jane.
Yes,
putter.
I know exactly, you know,
almost
what you're talking
like
about.
Like a chipper, and his grandfather gave it to him. And so he goes, hey, can you just, I just want to kind of make this look pretty good. And, you know, I researched the putter and put a nice high chrome finish on it and then kind of matted the face and you know, put the same coloring in there and put a new ferrule on it and gave it to him. And there were some tears. His eyes watered up. And that's the best part, is just to, you know, exceed their expectations, knock them dead. And that was a lot of fun for me.
It reminded me of
every time I pull out that Tommy Armour IMGL, that, you know, that I get a little, man, I had the best time with my dad on the golf course.
Now, this is going to sound kind of weird, but I know with the meticulous work that you do, you almost kind of have a bond with your work. It's like an artist with their creation. Are there times that you've worked so hard and you've brought a putter back to life and back to, you know, original specs, or you've made it even better than before, that you almost hate the owner to come and pick it up?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And it goes back to, you know, I like the blade putters. There's a couple 8802s I've done that I was like, you know, can I buy this one from you? And he goes, no, I have some memories from it. But, you know, that's my, you know, my business plan, or not my business plan, but my goal all along was I wanted to give you a putter. And this sounds horrible, but I want to give you a putter that you don't want to use because it looks too good. And I've gotten a couple of those, but every putter I get, that's the effort I put into it. I want to make it look so good that you're like, man, I can't use this. I'm just going to put this on the shelf or put this on the, you know, in my display rack or something like that. So, that's my goal with every putter.
The website is kickstandputters.com. You can see all the prices and finishes there. The man is Ken Hissom. He's our guest, Taking Dead Aim. Now, since we talked a couple of years ago, you've branched out, and I see on your website you're also doing some refinishing of irons. When did you start doing that?
I started doing that a little bit just right after, about a year after I started doing the putters. You know, started getting into doing those old Wilson 8802s or the Dynapower. The Wilson staff and the Dynapower and the Ben Hogan irons, one of those, you know, from the, you know, 60s, 70s and early 80s, in 90s. Nowadays, there's a lot of pieces to it, right? There's some composite material and those are really hard to do, but you know, it's going back to the old school golf, restoring those. And I get a kick out of that.
Yeah, I remembered, I was looking at your pictures, and I remembered I still have the set of Ben Hogan Apex blades that I got for graduating high school in 1988, and through years and moves and what have you, they had gotten in disrepair and were awful, and I sent them back not too many years ago and got them refinished. And I remember when they came back in the mail and I looked at those heads and it was, oh my God, this is just what they looked like when they, mm-hmm. when they came out of the box. And it was an unbelievable feeling to look down and see those historic irons looking brand new again.
Yeah. And I think from the last time, if I could segue a little bit, the last time we spoke, I was just getting into the face milling, right?
Right.
Remilling the putter face. So with today's putters, there's a lot of face, most everyone that you get, there's some kind of milling into it. So with that, I've done some research and worked with a couple guys, learned some stuff, and I can do any kind of face milling that you want to have done to the putter, whether it's deep milling, you know, any kind of pattern that you want in there. And then I can also do milling in your names or initials or any kind of a design that you want. So, for example, like with the Newports, right, the Scotty Newports, there's bumpers on the back of the putter. And a lot of times I can fill those in and put in and mill in your name, you know, whether it's Charlie or Ken, or if you have a saying or your school. I've done one for Auburn and put War Eagle on War on one bumper, Eagle on another. So I've been branching out with that as well.
I'm interested in paint fill because I don't think I could keep my hand steady enough to do some of the paint fill that I see that you've done on your website. What are some of the oddest color combinations that you've had requested?
Oh, wow. I've had a lot of them. You know, from all black, black on black, they called Murdered Out. You know, black and pink. I've done some, one that looks like an Easter egg. And I have done one going with that Cerakote that I was talking about. I made the whole putter look like one of those cars that change colors when you twist it in the light.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
They've come out with some Cerakote colors that if you apply it, let it cure, and you can twist the putter around, and it'll change from blue to green to purple and things like that. So I've done something like that with some odd paint fills. But my favorite paint fill are those translucent colors. You know, Scotty started it with the translucent red. And I could do purple, you know, green, yellow, orange, and blue. And those turn out really cool.
Are most of the finishes that you're doing now, are they fairly weather resistant, or do you still have to take some care in feeding with some of them?
The one that you have to take, most of them are weather resistant, right? So like the early Scotties, they're mainly carbon steel, and carbon steel will rust, right? That's just the science of the metal. So what I could do is I can plate it with nickel or chrome. I can also Cerakote it, and PVD will help it as well. But if you compromise it, scrape it, ding it pretty well, then, you know, it's going to expose some of the carbon. But as long as you put that, you know, cover on it, keep it in your hands after you three putt, it should well pretty well. The only thing that you really need to be conscious on is the black oxide, and that's what Scotty used early on with the black putters in the 90s.
Check out his work at kickstandputters.com and utilize his services. You will not regret it. That's Ken Hissom. I'd also like to thank Fansided.com's golf guy, Ron Mintz, and the general manager of the newly reopened Bobby Jones Golf Course in Atlanta, Brian Connolly, for their time and insight this week. A reminder, should you just be catching the last little bit of the show and wonder what all we've covered, no worries. Just subscribe to the Taking Dead Aim podcast at Apple Podcasts, and it will automatically download to the device of your choice most weeks just minutes after this terrestrial radio version of the show finishes airing. Additionally, a great way to stay in the loop with us is to be a regular consumer of our Facebook page. Be sure to like us on Facebook. Just search Taking Dead Aim. Featured there right now, articles on the brand new brewery at Pinehurst and a link to a video photo gallery from pictures a buddy of mine made at Turnberry in Scotland a couple of weeks ago that you've just got to see. It's breathtaking. Hey, weather-wise, looks like we finally got some fall cool in the QC, so you need to layer up to get your golf on. And if you do tee it up and let this game continue to haunt your soul and break your heart this weekend, remember to exhale, swing, pose, and keep in the short grass. I'm Charlie Nance on Twitter at @CLT_golfguy, and I'll see you right here next week, Taking Dead Aim, presented by the Charlotte office of RBC Wealth Management, located in the beautiful tree line of South Park and Academy Sports and Outdoors.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.